Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty.
And here we go, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. That's the name of this program every Monday night at 6 p.m. here on FM Talk 106.5. And we are ever the closer to kickoff of not preseason, not scrimmages, not exhibition games, but actual real live football as we come up. I'm looking at the calendar right now, and we are, 1 week and I believe 5 days away as kickoff on August the 28th. That is next Saturday. We'll get like 8 or 9 games, something like that, next Saturday. And then that following Thursday night, the first Thursday in September, that would be the second, we'll get a lot more college football games. And then that fourth, everyone will have played, except for whoever's playing on Sunday the 5th on that Labor Day weekend. But it's almost here. We've almost made it. It's been, well, almost a year since the beginning of football last year, and things are going to look a lot different this year, at least initially, as they get the season started. We will have full crowds, which you started to see some of this preseason, but for how long is the question? And will a team like the Saints, who is now mandated vaccines or a negative test within the last 3 days, will they get a full crowd anyway, even with 100% occupancy? I think there's a lot that we'll have to find out this year in both the collegiate level and the NFL level in regards to what COVID-19 is doing. I'm here tonight. Ian Blair is in tonight. Ian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dalton. Good afternoon, everybody. And welcome in, man. I swear it feels like it's been forever since... Where is Corey again?
Okay, yeah.
We're missing a big three member here, folks. We're down a man, and... We gotta figure out where he is.
We will be talking to Corey later in the show. He got caught up in the airplane business. It seems everyone I know that flies anywhere now has some kind of hang up, whether it's because of a lack of employees or weather in this case, where I think Corey was flying into Panama City or Pensacola or something like that. So we'll see where Corey is later, but we already have plenty of football to break down, and a new AP Top 25 dropped today, the preseason AP Top 25. We'll get into that as well. If you want to give us a call or a text, 251-343-0106. Or if you want to use this new fun function that we've added here at FM Talk 106.5 on the FM Talk 106.5 app, you can leave a voicemail just by downloading the app on iTunes App Store or the Google Play Store. Just search FM Talk 106.5. Once you pop that app open, it'll bring you the live stream as the radio sounds right now. And at the bottom of the screen, a microphone. You can click that microphone, leave us a message, and be on your way to being on the air. Or just do it the traditional way and give us a call, 343-0106. And a lot to talk about tonight as, well, I don't know, Alabama fans, is this a good thing or a bad thing? It seems to me that most of the Alabama fans I talk to hate being ranked number one in any sort of ranking system at the beginning of the year, which to me, a poor, misguided Tennessee fan, I would love just to see a number one ranking beside the team just once in this century. But Alabama's done it again for the fourth time in the past 6 seasons. The Tide ranked number one in the Associated Press top 25 poll. And it kind of makes sense. I mean, it is Alabama, so this is more of a vote for Nick Saban than anything, I would say, because so many great players were lost from the Tide, and we watched so many of them play and play well this last weekend in their first preseason games as professionals. But regardless, with all of the starters that are being replaced on the Alabama Crimson Tide offense, and with a defense that is hopefully, for Tide fans, going to be much better than the injured crew we saw last year, they're ranked number one once again. 6 national championships under head coach Nick Saban, and they're looking for a 7th this year. 47 of the 63 first-place votes, Ian, went to the Alabama Crimson Tide. 47 of 63. If you had to guess who got the other votes, you could probably figure it out. Oklahoma got 6 votes and come in ranked 2nd to begin the year. Clemson, with 6 votes, they come in ranked 3rd, just behind the Oklahoma Sooners. Ohio State only received 1 first-place vote, Maybe that's because they're not exactly sure who their starting quarterback will be, but they come in ranked fourth in this poll, and then Georgia in at number five with more first-place votes than Ohio State received, but fewer votes overall, with Georgia coming in fifth in the top 25. Texas A&M is sixth, and that is the three SEC teams that are currently ranked. Unless you count Oklahoma, there's only three SEC teams in the top 10, Alabama, Georgia, and Texas A&M. And we'll get to the rest of the SEC teams and where they're ranked here in just a minute, but that means a few things, this top five that we're looking at right now. First off, it means Georgia and Clemson on that first full Saturday of games in just a couple weeks, that is now a bona fide top five matchup, Georgia and Clemson. And depending on what Alabama does with Miami in that first week of the season, by the way, they're favored by 17 points in Atlanta. That may even be further up now. I think 17.5 the last I checked. But if Alabama plays around with Miami, or if they have a preseason-style game where they get it done but not in a major way, they win by, I think, even 7-10 points, then the winner of that Georgia-Clemson game, if they put up a good performance, we could be looking at a new number one just 1 week into the season because of this scheduling. Oklahoma, I'm not sure exactly who they play in week one. I could try to figure that out right now as we talk here, but they're ranked number two going in. And do they have the Heisman favorite on the Oklahoma Sooners sitting there in the backfield? Or is it the tide with Bryce Young in the backfield? Now, Nick Saban, I think, maybe made some waves this past week when he said that Alabama will have to put up good performances around Bryce Young. Was he saying that Bryce doesn't have what it takes to carry this team? Maybe. Or was he doing his Nick Saban thing where he's kind of rallying the troops and getting them ready for the year and saying that everyone needs to be dependable depending on whatever their position is? So just looking at that top five, it's all about quarterback right now. And can any of those five quarterbacks be the reason that their team makes it to the Final Four at the end of the year? Bryce Young at Alabama, Spencer, what's his last name with the Sooners? I always forget. I'll have to figure it out once he's in the SEC. But the Spencer kid at Oklahoma, who's heading into his sophomore year now. At Clemson, you got DJ Uiagalelei. We'll see how good he is. Is he another Deshaun Watson or Trevor Lawrence type? At Ohio State, you have the 18-year-old who just started, Quinn Ewers, but he just began camp this week, and he's yet to be named the starter. And then at Georgia, you've got the old quarterback at USC coming in. And I think all five are probably the top five favorites to win the Heisman this year, and that's what it's going to come down to by the end of the year. So Texas A&M sits there at number sixth in the nation, probably Jimbo Fisher's best team to this point on paper. And if he doesn't get it done against Alabama this year, will his seat start to get hot heading into 2022? Iowa State 7. That's pretty high ranking for the Iowa State team there. Cincinnati coming in at number 8. I believe that puts them as the highest-ranked American Athletic team for sure. Notre Dame coming in at number 9 and North Carolina 10. Oregon 11. Will they be able to really put themselves above the pack out there in the Pac-12 like we've seen in the past? Wisconsin 12, Florida 13, Miami 14, and USC 15. 16 LSU in this most recent AP Top 25, Indiana 17, Iowa 18, which should set up an Iowa-Iowa State game at the end of this year that should be magnificent if they can both play well. Penn State at 19, Washington 20, Texas 21, Coastal Carolina repping for the Sun Belt in at number 22, Louisiana Lafayette, same thing at number 23, and then Utah and Arizona State. So do those rankings surprise anyone out there? You have three SEC teams ranked in the top 10, Florida 13, LSU 16, and that's it. That's all we're seeing right now from the SEC. Of course, SEC East looking like another down year for them with just Georgia and Florida ranked. And then the SEC West, Auburn not making the cut for the top 25. And they're looking to see what they've got out of new head coach Brian Harsin. So it's always exciting getting these new polls out there. We had the coaches poll that came out a week ago. I don't think any surprises in that one. And a very similar looking poll here with the AP Top 25. And all this means is it's getting close to time to actually put the football out there and kick it and see who's got what and start to figure out the actual rankings from there, because we all know that preseason rankings mean very little in the long run. What does it mean that the Big Ten, the ACC, and the Pac-12 are having meetings and talking about building an alliance? Paul Feinbaum talked about that a lot during his show today, and I'm sure that'll be the topic of discussion for at least a couple more days, but we'll talk about it a little bit right here on Sports Night when we get back. Some Toto for you on this Monday night. 3430106. This is Sports Night. FM Talk 106.5. My name is Dalton Orwig. Ian Blair in studio tonight. 3430106 again, the number if you want to get involved. And Auburn, they didn't get that AP Top 25 ranking, and who really knows how far off they are. But they did get their first preseason scrimmage in under the lights on Saturday night at Jordan-Hare. According to the head coach, Brian Harsin, they ran about 100 plays, and they got a bunch of first team, second team. Well, all the teams got some time under the lights. Bo Nix, of course, the number one, the uno numero QB with the first teamers. That's not a big surprise at all. TJ Finley, the former LSU quarterback, getting second team snaps, and true freshman Demetrius Davis, third string snaps. And Harsin, you know, it's they scrimmaged during spring ball, and this is their first true scrimmage under the lights so far. So, you know, they weren't perfect, and they won't be perfect this year. But Harsin said he thought they made good decisions, these quarterbacks. And he said there were some turnovers the defense created that were good, but also some on the offensive side they could probably do without. So, I don't know. I guess that's the thing about these preseason scrimmages, especially with college teams. And, you know, we're not seeing the real stuff unless you've got that insider access, that press pass on that allows you. Well, even a lot of the times the press that follows the team aren't seeing the real scrimmages when Saban and Harsin and these coaches make their decisions. But you can glean a lot from these. And as a fan, it's difficult because you want to see your offense go out and ball. But then if they move the field, move down the field with ease, then, well, what are you looking at on that defensive side of the ball? And then vice versa, if defense goes out and are taking pick sixes the other way and are knocking the ball out of running back's hands, then what does that say about your offense? Do you have a world-beater defense, or is your offense just terrible? I think the main thing here with the Auburn team scrimmaging is we're looking at a brand-new coaching staff, a brand-new coach, and it's going to take some time for them to figure this whole thing out. It's probably a good thing that they're playing Akron in that week one game, and they're not head up against Clemson in Atlanta, Georgia for week one. Harsin said, all the time at the quarterback decision, it comes down to decision-making. When you go out there and it's time to play, you've got to make great decisions. You got to make sure you're putting your team in the best position to win. So it sounds to me, and you really can't take much from coaches preseason or midseason, what they actually say to the media, but you have two different kinds of coaches, and I'm sure you got more than that, but two main kinds of coaches when it comes to the offensive side of the ball and specifically the quarterback position. Do they want someone who's going to go out there and put the team on his back and let it rip in the style of Brett Favre? Are they going to go, you know, four wide, maybe, you know, three wide with a couple tight ends on the line? Are they going to just let it rip and have Bo Nix get out there and see what he can do and scramble around and possibly make bad decisions, but at the same time possibly move the ball up and down the field? Or does Harsin want a guy who will hand the ball off, get the players in the huddle, make sure they get out on time, limit the number of penalties, make safe throws, no, you know, 50-yard bombs when you could take the 7-yard completion that's wide open? Is that who Harsin is looking for? Because I don't know if Bo Nix is his guy, if that's what he wants. I'm not sure that Bo Nix can get out there and play that safe style of quarterback. And it's just, it's never struck me as his personality. I think even if he's not, even if he doesn't have the ability to go bombs away on offense, that's, it seems to me that's the type of guy that Bo Nix is. It'll be interesting to see how he and Brian Harsin mesh in this first year together.
Well, I'd say the first thing, and after hearing, you know, obviously we're an Auburn-affiliated station here in FM Talk 106.5, you can actually listen to these Auburn games, as they're called, right, on Saturdays here starting up August 28th, I think, is when the first game starts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of those games I got the chance to listen to last year. And Bo, the thing with Bo Nix is he can throw. There is talent there. Like, it's not just we need to get him out. The reason why this is so complicated of a situation with Bo Nix is because he can be a guy who takes over a game, mm-hmm. and he can make these decisions. We see the flashes of greatness whenever he's been able to find guys like Seth Williams on a game winner. You know, I think it was like week 4 or 5 that he finds Seth Williams. Seth Williams hits a quick spin move and wins the game.
He opened it up week 1 against Oregon.
Right.
With a game-winning touchdown pass to Seth Williams.
And he can definitely, you know, take over games. The thing with Bo Nix, and I think, you know, Gus Malzahn touched on this, several other players have touched on this, just, you know, like former players from Auburn, is Bo's decision making needed to improve his sophomore year, and they didn't see enough improvement. So Harsin making that comment, I can understand where he's coming from, because right now, if Bo Nix struggles with that playmaking going forward, and I'm saying playmaking versus passing, because folks, those are two different things. You can play make without just making a super stellar pass.
Well,
right?
you think of the two most notorious playmakers of the last decade, and that would be Mahomes at the NFL level and Johnny Manziel back with Texas A&M. Just able to make it happen when things break down.
So with Bo Nix, I think what needs to be going forward is let's give Bo some time. Let's see how that decision making looks. If it's not the right way that Harsin is looking for, all right, then we need to find somebody else. But at the same time, I think to answer your question about who exactly is Harsin looking for, I think Harsin's really trying to feel this team out, because this is a situation that I don't think he's really ever found himself in, where he could take this team and mold it in whatever direction. It's not like he's coming into a situation where he's, you know, the program's been established and there's already a culture. Harsin right now is establishing that culture. So depending on where he thinks the game is going to go, because we've seen a lot more teams throwing the ball, so maybe that first style quarterback of being able to rip it down, you know, 70, 80 yards a throw is going to be the right thing to do. Maybe Harsin wants to go against the grain there. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But I think overall with Harsin, once he makes that decision, Bo Nix will be the next thing in line on his agenda to sort out.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, you know, he owes Bo Nix nothing. That Bo Nix was on the team when he got in there. We've seen coaches before who – maybe the fans of the team feel more of an allegiance to some of these players than the new coaches do. And I think that's maybe not anymore with all of the Auburn fans, but most Auburn fans have to feel some type of way for Bo Nix just because of the legacy of his family and his father playing on the same team. And just, you know, people have been looking forward to Bo Nix being on that team for years, and he hasn't been what they wanted. And we'll just have to see, you know, what comes of this year when, if he hasn't put it together yet, you got to start to think that it just ain't going to happen. But you also can't expect things to be 100% in week one for Bo Nix, learning this new offensive system. What they do have going for them, the Auburn Tigers, is the schedule, at least very early on. Akron at home on September 4th. The next week they get Alabama State again at home. So there you go. That'll be 120 minutes of running Brian Harsin's offense and Brian Harsin's defense and Brian Harsin's special teams. Auburn basically gets two preseason games there. Now, they can't screw it up. You can't lose to Akron, because then people will really start to look critically at this program early on. But that week 3 matchup is when we will see, I think, we will know for a fact whether Bo Nix is the guy to lead this offense for the rest of the year when they play at Penn State. 6:30 p.m., a Saturday night game. I can already picture – it'll be on ABC. I can already picture a whiteout crowd there in Penn State. They love doing that. And this will be the biggest game on their schedule very early on. And what will these Auburn Tigers be able to do against them? They've got a veteran quarterback in Sean Clifford with the Nittany Lions. It's still back there. They always seem to figure out the running back position. So that'll be a very interesting week 3 matchup. And then following that, Georgia State at home, who is no slouch. And then things get real. LSU in Baton Rouge, Georgia at home, at Arkansas, What kind of team are they putting together there in Arkansas? And then home against Ole Miss and at Texas A&M. Just a brutal stretch right there in the middle of the year with LSU, Georgia, Ole Miss, and Texas A&M. And then, of course, wrapping the season up with Alabama. We'll get to know a lot about Brian Harsin here in year one with these Auburn Tigers. When we come back, because we're about to run into the break right now, and taking your text, 343-0106, taking your texts or calls at that number, we got to talk about the splitting of the conferences. And with the huge news a couple weeks ago that Texas and Oklahoma are on their way to the SEC, making this a 16-team conference, we were all wondering, you know, what to make of the rest of the Big 12, what's going to happen with the Pac-12 and the ACC and the Big 10. Well, now they're talking about making an alliance. And you better believe it's all about the money. We'll get into that when we get back. 343-0106, Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night, 343-0106. Did you see Ali's grandson got into the ring this weekend? Muhammad Ali's grandson, Nico Ali Walsh. He fought this weekend, 21 years old, and, well, I guess he won after 70 seconds. That doesn't sound right. He fought in Catoosa, Oklahoma. Everyone knows that's where all the big guns, they fight. Madison Square Garden has nothing on the arena in Catoosa, Oklahoma, and that's why Ali began his career there. Ali Walsh, it's just an emotional journey, this whole ride. Obviously, my grandfather, I've been thinking about him so much, I miss him, and that lived completely up to my expectations. I have no idea whether this Ali Walsh will ever be any good at boxing. I'd have to think probably not if he's 21 years old and we're just hearing about him for the first time. So many of these boxers get, you know, their name is out there way earlier than at 21 years old. But there you have it. Ali's grandson stepping into the ring for the first time this weekend. The big news, you've probably heard a little bit about it on the Paul Feinbaum show today, but everyone's been waiting for the next move after the announcement that Texas and Oklahoma have been accepted by the SEC and will be SEC teams within the next 5 years. And I believe Corey and I, when we discussed this, Corey said he still thinks it'll be 5 years before they're actually an SEC team. I think next year you will see Texas and Oklahoma playing alongside Alabama and Auburn and LSU. And I think that's because the Big 12 will be no more by next year. That teams will have fled for other conferences, or the whole thing will just be disbanded. And today was when move number two came out. Not exactly. There's been no real movement yet, but just talk of these different conferences kind of positioning themselves to get as much as they can out of this next seismic shift within college football and the collegiate sports in general. So the report over the weekend from The Athletic is that the Pac-12 commissioner, George Kliavkoff, the Big Ten commissioner, Kevin Warren, and the ACC commissioner, Jim Phillips, have been in, quote, regular communication and have had in-person discussions about forming an alliance. So, you know, first question is, what the hell does that mean? An alliance with three of the Power Five conferences? What would that entail? Would they be sharing recruits, or how exactly would they be allied? They're saying it would mostly be built around scheduling, which makes sense. You'd get more non-conference Pac-12 games against Big Ten teams and ACC teams. But to me, I'm not sure how much more you could do than just that. Warren and Kliavkoff, the Big Ten and Pac-12 commissioners, they've been in Rose Bowl meetings over the past week, and Pac-12 said that all three commissioners met in the Big Ten's home city of Chicago last week. ESPN says the alliance could, quote, create stability without schools moving conferences. Well, what they're not mentioning there is the Big 12 is not involved in these discussions at all, and the eight teams that would be remaining in the Big 12 after Texas and Oklahoma move on over to the SEC. And just like Feinbaum's been saying over the last 4 hours, for Bob Bowlsby and the rest of these remaining school athletic directors that are in teams that are still in the Big Ten or Big 12, that's not good news that these other conferences aren't discussing you merging with them at all. The only other conference I've heard of that's interested in any of these Big 12 teams is the American Athletic Conference with Cincinnati and ECU, Houston, Memphis, UCF. We all know of these AAC teams at this point, and I think it's fair to say the American Athletic Conference is the top conference right now in the group of five, with maybe the Sun Belt gaining some ground on them after this last year with Coastal Carolina and Louisiana Lafayette. But what would this alliance mean? I think that's what people are having trouble putting their hand on. What would it entail? Is it just about scheduling? In that case, sure, you might get some big-time matchups. We might get USC taking on Clemson every couple of years. You might get Oregon coming down to play Florida State like they did for the title game a while back. But that, to me, gives more opportunities for these teams to lose some of these non-conference games when we've seen the cupcake scheduling over these last few years. Really, it's all about the money. I think you got to look at who's losing money in these deals and who's gaining money and where is the money that will be available. And it's all in TV contracts. And the money that's missing now in the Big 12 with their TV deals, it makes them being a conference just – it's almost pointless at this point without Texas and Oklahoma in the mix because – who are they with just those eight teams? I mean, you have Baylor. Okay, they're not a draw, except maybe in basketball. Iowa State, same thing. I mean, they're ranked seventh in the top 25 right now, but they don't have the name brand. Kansas is terrible. Kansas State is terrible. Oklahoma is headed out. Oklahoma State, no one's talked about them since Oklahoma made their announcement that they're leaving. What kind of TV audience does Oklahoma State have? Same for TCU and same for Texas Tech and West Virginia. I mean, as a whole, without Texas and Oklahoma, that's a ridiculously bad conference. That is a terrible conference. And not even Big 12, at that point, Big 8 fans will want to tune in to watch those teams play. And you're not getting an automatic bid out of that. Yeah, if Baylor happens to win the Big 8 in 3 years, they're not automatically going to the college football playoff. So without these other three major conferences, including the Big 12 in any of these discussions, the only thing I can see them doing is disbanding and the schools getting on where they're able to get on, whether that's the American Athletic Conference, whether Oklahoma State's able to strike a deal with the Pac-12, or maybe the SEC finds a way to bring in a team like West Virginia or Iowa State. Iowa State more likely would go to the Big 10, but it's the journalists who said what you should expect from here on is chaos after the SEC thing, I still think they're right. I just think it's taking a little bit longer to come to fruition as these teams jockey for position.
Well, we're talking about where's the money going, right? Because as some people would love to try to just gloss over, this is a business. Before anything else, this is a business. These universities are having to make money in order to keep these programs alive. That's how it is. So, you're saying the Big 12 is not involved in any of these conversations? That sounds like it's an implosion waiting to happen. And if that happens, it's going to be free agency for these universities trying to get back into other conferences. So, I think, and then I've heard this from some people, from a percentage of the population of fans who are watching this go down, as these three conferences may try to kind of form their own, I don't want to say their own mega conference in a sense, but if the SEC's gotten so big that it's no longer a conference, it's an association, mm-hmm. You have something come out, you know, the American Athletic Association, you know, AAA or, you know, what have you. And so something may come out of that where you have the ACC, right? And then you have these other couple conferences that come in together. The Big 12 ends up imploding, and the timeline that I'm seeing here is the Big 12 ends up dispersing, right? And when that happens, now you have two associations, and it basically becomes a mirror of the NFL where you have two different conferences. Now, that could theoretically work, but I think what we're mainly well, we're mainly at a loss at here, folks. And really, I mean, this is something that we haven't seen before, at least in this on this scale, is if the Big 12 is in fact not being included in these conversations, I think the other conferences have already made up their mind. And the Big 12, I think you're right with this whole deal of, you know, while this contract is still going on, Texas and Oklahoma, yes, they still technically are still a part of that conference. If they're not being involved in discussions, this may be gone within a year. Within a year, not a year from today. 8-9 months, and that may be it. So, I mean, we've got to prepare for ourselves, folks, for the realization that at some point, the conferences may start to monopolize these programs and how they're running things, because that's what's been happening for a while. We just haven't come out and said it that way. So I think going forward, Texas Christian University may be a saving grace whenever they're able to pick up a good recruiting class. They have had some solid recruiting classes and some solid teams in the past. But I think for what it's worth, Dalton, and I think even you could probably bounce some ideas off of this, if you have two associations coming into this thing where now we have college football split on a dividing line, that's just basically the NFL.
Yeah.
At the college level, because name, image, and likeness is already in effect. They're already making a lot of athletes are already making money anyways, right? So that's where we're standing with that.
Yeah, it's a brand new world. That's for sure. And no one knows exactly where college football and really college athletics as a whole goes from here. You know, the discussions about what NIL and what these mergers mean for college basketball haven't even really begun in earnest yet, as everyone's getting ready for college football. But this is big for college basketball and a lot of other college sports as well. So it's going to be a heck of a year, and I'm just glad we're getting close to it being started here. When we come back from the break, we got a lot to get into, and the five rookies that are much discussed after these preseason games from this weekend, who will have the best NFL career? Justin Fields, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson. I'll go ahead and add Jordan Love in there since he didn't get a snap last year. The youth movement is alive in the NFL, and I'll give you that take when we get back. 343-0106, and why, even with the vaccinations and the masks, I don't think this will be a normal year. I think there's going to be games that are shut down, and I'll tell you why coming up on Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. I try to run, but see, I'm not that fast. All right, 6:50 FM Talk 106.5 and Sports Night on your Monday night, one of the last Monday nights before the live bullets start flying in college football. And you know, how long will it take before we get our first vaccine forfeit in either the NCAA or the NFL? Both SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey and NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell have said, hey, listen, we're not slowing down. We're not stopping for any team if they, for some reason, cannot play because of COVID-19. And really, before a lot was known about these vaccines and before all the Yankees tested positive after getting vaccinated, they were already saying, listen, if you test positive and your team can't play and you have to quarantine, then it's your own fault for not getting vaccinated. Well, now we know that a lot of professional athletes that have been vaccinated have had breakthrough cases. And I think the New York Yankees were one of the first where people started looking around and going, should this be happening? Because remember, when these first breakthrough cases began, all of the people from the cheap seats would go online and say, that's disgusting, these New York Yankees haven't gotten vaccinated. How could they do that for the rest of America? Why are they being such pieces of trash and not getting vaccinated? And then word comes out, Aaron Judge is vaccinated. Oh, this guy's vaccinated. That guy's vaccinated. They just happened to test positive for the virus. So that's baseball, who's able to make up games with doubleheaders that are seven innings and waiting to reschedule later in the year when the two teams meet again. They can't do that for the NFL. Even with 17 regular season weeks this year, 18 weeks, 17 games. And college football won't be able to do that this year because they just have not set themselves up to be as mobile as they were last year with these conference-only schedules. And I think it's coming. I think we're going to get a big name in football who has been vaccinated and who tests positive going into that weekend's games. And that'll be a big decision on the minds of Greg Sankey or whoever the coach or athletic director at that university is, or in the NFL. If you've got a vaccinated quarterback, if Patrick Mahomes is vaccinated and tests positive, do you tell the outside world? Do you let them know that your quarterback, Mahomes, has tested positive, even if he's not showing any symptoms? I don't think it's over here when we talk about these pro teams. And I think on the line now we have Corey LeBound, 843-0106, if you want to join Corey and me and Ian. Corey, are you available now?
I am available, Dalton. I'm a little frustrated with the time-consuming issues that Fred presented for myself today, but I'm with you, brother.
And here, I didn't think Fred would affect any of us in any way, and I was wrong. Because
absolutely.
Fred got you for sure. So what do you think about my take there, that I think we're going to see chaos in both college football and NFL this year with some of these breakthrough vaccine cases?
Well, you know, I think there's really not much of a difference between 1 year ago besides fans are going to be in attendance. I think that cancellations have and will take place. I think that as much as you don't want to lose revenue, Dalton, revenue is going to be lost. There are going to be games that are going to have to be canceled and forfeited. And we've seen that, like you mentioned about, with baseball, with high school football, which hasn't even kicked off yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll probably see a couple of cases in football as well. But it's just something that it's the new norm, unfortunately.
Right.
And it's sticking around for a while.
It's a new norm, and we don't even know exactly what it is yet. So
right.
Still so much to figure out. And that's why I think some of the tough talk from Goodell early on where your team will have to forfeit if you can't play, it's like, dude, we don't even know, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in September and October and November. And I think, you know, with Goodell, he may be able to change some of those rules, but I think we're looking at some more chaos and some very unhappy fans when the first team that's unable to play ends up testing positive with vaccinated. And, you know, this comes on the heels of the Atlanta Falcons being the team, first team to announce 100% vaccination heading into the season. So no excuses, Atlanta, except unless you test positive. Anyway, Corey, how much preseason did you get to check out this last weekend? I know you were kind of out of town. And, Ian, I know you watched some of this preseason stuff here. Lots of young quarterbacks getting the spotlight this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important for those rookies to get it. I mean, you look at Trevor Lawrence, had an opportunity to watch him play a couple of series for Jacksonville. And then when you start talking on the Green Bay side, Jordan Love, I don't think that he'll play during the regular season. Aaron Rodgers is the guy there. But, you know, any reps that you can get in the preseason are very valuable, whether you're a two or a three, because that can be the difference in you making the roster or being a practice squad quarterback. So, with that being said, I just love the fact that toe to leather. I think on Saturday we had a quadruple header that we were able to watch on NFL Network and other places. But it's just good to see football back in full effect.
Yeah, it is. And honestly, I've been paying so little attention to Jacksonville that was the first time I saw Trevor Lawrence in a Jaguars jersey. And I did watch that game, like so many others, to see Trevor Lawrence and then to see exactly – you know, what they're working with Tim Tebow, and we could save the Tebow takes for another week, but with Trevor Lawrence, he held on to the ball a little too long, especially very early on, and I think he'll figure it out. Justin Fields is the most discussed name after this first weekend, and that's because he went 14 of 20, 175 yards passing, and two touchdowns, and then after the game said the game was slower than he thought. I don't know why you would play with fate there, but it ain't going to stay slow for very long, I'd say.
Absolutely. We'll see if he says that, if the Chicago Bears offensive line can keep him upright. And it's not like NFL players need any bulletin board material. But,
right.
You know, you need to stay humble as a rookie. And with that being said, we'll see if he's able to come through for his franchise.
So let's just talk about these six main quarterbacks, the five rookies, and then Jordan Love, who basically is a rookie. He didn't get any snaps last year. Zach Wilson is almost sure to be the immediate starter if he hasn't already been named starter for the Jets, and he looked pretty good in limited time. Trevor Lawrence, I think, is going to be a really good quarterback, if not great, and I think he will also start. That's pretty obvious. Then you have Trey Lance, Mac Jones, and Justin Fields. Trey Lance behind Jimmy Garoppolo, Mac Jones maybe behind Cam Newton. We're not sure about that. And then Justin Fields, who has Andy Dalton and Nick Foles ahead of him. I think all five will get major playing time this year, and I don't think Jordan Love will, barring injury, of course, with Aaron Rodgers. But I'm seeing Mac Jones, and I think he might be behind Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson, the third quarterback to get real snaps in this regular season.
I agree with you. I think that Cam Newton definitely on come game one, he'll be the starter. But I think Mac Jones will play probably five or six games into the season. Very similar to how Tua was thrown into the fire a year ago with the Dolphins. I think the same thing will happen with Mac Jones, and I look forward to it, to seeing his development with the Patriots system and just continuing to grow in the Belichick system.
And how about Patrick Surtain? First yes. time under the lights, he gets a 30-yard pick six as a who's he with now? Miami? Is that
he's a baller. He's a baller.
Yeah, no doubt.
Dan is a baller with the Broncos.
Talking about our full stadiums and the vaccinations and stuff, Dave says, hey, guys, I'm a soccer fan. Let me tell you something. The kickoff for the English Premier League was huge with stadiums full. Folks were jazzed over there. And, Dave, I gambled on and watched a lot of the English Premier League over the weekend, and he's dead on. I mean, full stadiums, full-throated cheering, and if we get anywhere near that with college football and the NFL, I am very excited. Corey, I hate the tough time you're having out there, but I'm glad you were able to get on with us here in this last segment.
Absolutely. My pleasure, dog. Wouldn't have it any other way. Look forward to joining you back next Monday, face-to-face.
Safe travels, buddy. Thanks. Does it. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. Coming up next, Sweet Home Canabama with Jennifer Boozer. And I'll be back in the morning on Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan.